Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to another fine episode of the Tombstone Podcast, a podcast where we talk about video games, the video game industry, and whatever else we want to talk about. My name's Devin.
I'm Kevin.
My name's Dominic.
And I'm Zach.
And we are going to go with our regular round-robin intro, starting with Kevin.
Well, I guess the only real thing I played recently was The Last of Us. I'm doing my research on it. No comment.
No comment. Cool.
We'll get into it cool. Whenever the episode comes.
We'll get to it yeah. Later. Yeah.
Just a little teaser right. Trailer.
Yep. Dominic, what you got for us?
I actually took it old school and got Oddworld Stranger's Wrath, which was initially for the original Xbox. And then maybe a week or two ago, probably before that, it was illuminated to me that it was the HD version was released on Steam, and it has been for like, I don't know, years, right? Yeah, since like 2010 maybe or whatever. And I love it. It's like, this is one of my childhood favorite games. It's, I don't know, it's kind of silly because, you know, it's the whole like Oddworld element of like, oh, it's just like wacky kooky monsters, but it has some pretty serious undertones, and it has a really, really interesting storyline that really unfolds in a brilliant way. So definitely a long time personal favorite of mine from childhood.
Yeah, so this is Oddworld, right? So is this, yeah, this is related to the cinematic platformer Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey, and all that? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's in the same universe.
Okay, so there's Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey, Oddworld, Abe's Exodus,
and then Munch's Odyssey as well.
Okay. So
what'd you say?
Next is another one is Oddworld, Munch's Odyssey was one of the bigger ones as well.
Okay. So this is not necessarily a sequel, but it's in universe.
Yes.
Yeah, it's in the same universe.
Okay, I hadn't heard about either of those other two. I just knew the two I named.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, those are interesting. I like, if you want to kind of almost in a way get sold on that game, I recommend watching Matthew Matosas' video on why the HD remake sucks. Because it really sells you on the original. And it's like, oh, wow, that's actually really cool ideas.
And what's interesting, I only knew about Stranger's Wrath because my brother and I saw it in Blockbuster when we were kids, and we were like, oh, we got to try this. It's like, it's a single player action adventure that's like Western themed. And we're like, okay, yeah, sure. I had never heard about Abe's Exodus or Abe's Odyssey or Munch's Odyssey at all until I finished Stranger's Wrath. But yeah, oh, I could go on about it. it's a fun mm-hmm. one.
All right, Zach, what you got for us?
So I'm actually excited for the next, or I guess first, Kingdom Hearts DLC. It's coming out in January. Yeah, the trailer got released, was it earlier this past week or the week before, sometime recently. And yeah, end of January, DLC is coming out, so looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's your jam, yeah. Obviously.
We're gonna lock you in a closet one day until you record the until you record the Kingdom Hearts episode.
Yeah, it's gonna be like I remember. So if y'all know Barry Kramer from Game Grumps, he made like those Kingdom Hearts videos where he kind of explained it very briefly. Well, to do that, he just talked to his friend who knew more about it. I think it was like a 7-hour discussion or something. I think that's just what's going to need to happen.
Yeah.
It's a really confusing storyline. I've tried to follow it a few times. No fucking clue at all.
Yeah.
What happens. There's a lot of things that just happen for no reason, and then they try to explain it later. But in doing so, it just makes things worse.
Just listen to Starbomb's song, "The Subtle Plot of Kingdom Hearts." That'll be perfect.
Yeah, that'll really give you a good idea.
it's a waking nightmare, man. I still have yet to understand it.
All right, so for me, what is something that I'm excited for? Been playing. Well, I finally have the Star Wars, new Star Wars game. I'm going to be playing that pretty soon. Mm. And then I'm, you know, excited for Cyberpunk, of course. I think we've mentioned that a few times.
Oh, but for sure.
That's it's coming, man. I am so ready for Cyberpunk to be out. I'm going to hopefully have new build for my PC, be able to get a better GPU and CPU and be able to run that shit at ultra 60 FPS, you know. I'm ready. It's going to be a beautiful game.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. So today we are going to be talking about Hollow Knight. Dominic is going to host this one. He's going to bring us on whatever journey he has planned for us. So Dominic, if you want to take it away.
Oh, thank you for allowing me to do the honors. So Hollow Knight, ladies and gentlemen, if you are unfamiliar, it is it's a game made by Australian developers Team Cherry, who I believe it's like it wasn't a very big group as Hollow Knight is like an indie title. Wasn't a big group of people that made this. But this is one of my all-time favorite games in my entire collection. It is a story about bugs and this sort of infection or something that's causing a lot of these bugs to go crazy and to become and everything like that. And so your job is this far traveler who has no idea, who has no memory of who he was or anything like that, comes back to this kingdom that's overrun by crazy monsters, and the goal is it's a little bit more nuanced than that, because you can either, I don't know, the game has multiple endings and I'm not going to spoil that yet, but it's an incredibly story rich and incredibly atmospheric, very thematic and narratively driven experience that is among my all-time favorite experiences. I know, Zach, you introduced it to me, actually, because I was on the hunt for a Metroidvania, and you were like, oh, this just came out, and I played it and fell in love with it instantaneously. And I know Devin and Kevin, did y'all ever play Hollow Knight yet, or like maybe played a little bit or seen a little bit of it? Or like...
I have not.
Okay.
I have played a good bit. In talking with Zach about it, I apparently did everything wrong.
Yeah, it's
I was, because like, there are so it branches wildly, and you can sequence break, but like normally people don't. Normally people, I guess, with fucking a brain will go the kind of intended path. But if you want a sequence break, you can. Apparently, I unintentionally did that and went to like one of the hardest bosses in the game, like pretty quickly.
Yes, which we'll talk about that in a minute. But the object of as we've already defined before, Metroidvania has a couple caveats to it. It's a lot of sort of branching paths that sort of seemingly intertwine, but you also come back to sort of this hub town. In this hub town, you can get unlockables and upgrades and different things like that, as well as all over the map. But what comes with that is the options that you have as a player and as the agency that you have as a character to say, oh, well, let's just go explore. Let's explore the atmosphere. And in Hollow Knight's case, the atmosphere that you can explore will wildly change. And they grouped it up pretty evenly and pretty diversely as well. You know, there's one level, for example, Green Path. It's all rich and beautiful vegetation and, you know, full of vibrant fauna. And the monsters that you fight are all sort of like grass themed, and everything is stylized exactly as it's supposed to be. But just maybe south of it is this weird bog feeling area where everyone is just like jellyfish. And it's like... everything is very, very localized to its respective areas. But instead of just going on about one thing or another, I'll start with the story. The lore, in my opinion, I found that it is extremely deep as a story, firstly. And then secondly, it's also very intricately placed in the game, as opposed to it being a narrated experience. to me, it feels like the way that From Software, in the Souls-like game or the Soulsborne games, has their sort of world building, and that's through a lot of optional dialogue and a lot of item flavor text.
Yeah, and just like those, it kind of, you can glean a lot from the world just by being in it, you know?
Right.
Like, there are certain places I get to and certain things that happen that they don't explain, like, who they are or why they're there, but I get a generally good idea from the circumstance.
Right. They show you as opposed to just sort of telling you what's going on, mm-hmm. which is the holy grail of literary storytelling. But no, that's exactly right. And you'll find that everywhere that you go, there is something there that gives you an idea of the place and that gives you an idea of the story. And to me they go very specific too. It sort of also boils down to just what sort of secrets you're able to find too, because the secrets that are in this game tell the stories the most. You know, there is optional dialogue that you have where it's like you'll come across a guy who's just sort of like hanging out and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm from this, you know, I think I'm from like a far off place. I don't really have many memories before coming here. And man, there's just this weird air about the place, man. It's a really interesting area. But anyway, see you later. And then, you know, you either never see him again, or the next time you see him, it's a new dialogue. It's, man, you know, spent a lot of time in here, and now I'm starting to feel this like weird way. And if I remember correctly, there is a particular character that ends up like losing his sanity and losing his like consciousness because of this underlying threat that is in the world. But yeah, it's all based on what you do as a character that tells you that gives you the sort of story that you experience. And that's something that I appreciate the most about Hollow Knight's story.
Yeah, like with I'll be the first to say I'm not really one for at least in video games, I'm not one for just a, you know, literal narrative. I don't care as mm-hmm. much about the literal events as much as the world it's in, because mm-hmm. I like to see, observe, and interact with a system. And this world, you know, like I said before, it all kind of makes sense. It all kind of just shows you what's going on. And I feel like it's particularly really good at, you know, doing that sort of having systems in place that all make sense. It's all pretty well thought out. And just going through it, I'm kind of able to piece together all of these things. And, you know, I like the little like side characters that you just see around. It, to me, that adds a lot to the experience, because it's just kind of, you know, one of my favorite scenes or one of my favorite things that'll happen is like your save point is sitting on a bench. And one of my favorite yeah. things is like quietly sitting on a bench with this dude that I've like happened to run across like 5 times already. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, this is just nice, you know? So it just yeah. feels nice to be like get your hands in it and like feel the characters and the world more so than, you know, the literal narrative that's happening to you.
Right, because the literal narrative is really subverted too. Mm-hmm. and it's exactly that point. The only way that you can really figure it out is if you take a moment and rest to make it like, you know, as it is in the game. And when you rest at these like benches, which are basically like bonfires in a sense, that's where you find the atmosphere the most, is when there's like peace and when there's quiet. Because, and they've stylized it too, like there are certain benches that you rest at that are meant for like that screen cap moment, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. but even then, it's again, you know, through the particular dialogues that you have with these really, really interesting characters. That's the other thing too. All of these characters have so much depth to them that when you talk to them, you actually read their personality, and you can understand what might happen next because of their personality. Like the biggest meme of the show, God, of the game, pretty much is one of the characters named Zote, who's like oh, I'm the baddest of the bad. I'm, you know, I've gone on this place and done that place, and I've, you know, the strongest of them all. You know, don't get in my way or else you'll be sorry. But then you come to find out he's like a total poser, and he's like all talk but no, you know, nothing to show for it. You know, and that's just one of those amazing elements of that story. But with that story and with that atmosphere, what makes that important, or what makes those atmospheric moments more prevalent, is how they did the art style to me. And everything, it's a 2D side scroll, you know, Metroidvania style, but everything is, you know, it's all hand drawn, which still blows my mind. Anytime that there, it's like a buzzword for me. I hear like hand animation in a video game and I'm like, oh shit, like sign me up. You know what I mean? But what it adds is it adds their own style. And the particular style of Hollow Knight is like, it's all bugs, but they're not like gross, like disgusting, like creatures, except for like a few of them that are like made to be that way. You know, everything's like, it all seems kind of cutesy to me. It's kind of like, it's kind of dark and gloomy, but the characters are all drawn in like a really, really cute stylized way. So you, to me, I'm able to sort of latch on to them a little bit more and say like, oh, like I'm interested in those side characters. I'm interested in that side plot and that side story, because those side plots and side stories do have an effect on you as a player character in the end.
Yeah, like I would say that the aesthetic of the game is one of the, you know, major selling points for me, because the main thing I like about the game is the atmosphere, and the aesthetic of it is very, like, it's very indicative of that atmosphere. It helps you feel what you need to be feeling. And, right, you know, with the backgrounds, there's this really solid sense of depth in a lot of places. Like, you can kind of see into the background. It's, like, out of focus, but you can tell that there's just, like, a lot of space and things going on behind you and stuff.
Right.
And other places, it's, like, dense foliage and this and that. So it looks wonderful. And like you said, the characters are really, like, you say bugs, and it, like, when I started the game, I didn't know it was bugs. They're just little cute, endearing characters.
Right.
And, you know, the little touches are what really sell it. Like, you fight with, like, what is it, like a little tack or a little nail or something?
Yeah, it's a nail.
Yeah, it's a little nail. And then, like, you know, whatever her name is, the, you know, girl.
Hornet.
Who, yeah, Hornet. Ooh. There we go. I didn't want to be wrong, but yeah, she fights with like a sewing pin or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a needle and thread.
Yeah, needle and thread. So it's like, it's this neat little, like, oh, it, you know, visually makes a lot of sense, and it just kind of immerses me even more. Just like with, you know, like you said, with the character who, you know, he has his own little narrative. It makes sense, you know, and all the other characters, their narratives make sense, even if you don't see the whole story. It kind of, you know, you can fill in the blanks and it makes sense. So to me, there's just so much thought and polish visually in the game that makes you sort of understand the world and also accept it to be a possibility, right?
Right, right. And Hornet is, as we call in the community, Bug Waifu. She is... she is, I want to say she's the focal point of the next game, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the player character in the next game.
Yeah.
Which... Yeah, that's why with this game, with Hollow Knight, they just kept releasing expansion after expansion, which is a really cool business strategy that I like, that like Shovel Knight did. It's like,
yeah,
we're not going to depreciate in value, but we're going to keep adding shit to the game, so it actually is continuing to be worth whatever money it sells at, right? So
exactly.
It's like, instead of charging you, we're just going to not drop the price and just keep adding to the game.
Yeah.
And they did that up until they were like, this is so different, we have to make a sequel.
Exactly. And we'll talk about the DLC in a second, but one thing that I did want to talk about is, you know, when it comes to narratively driven experiences, the biggest complaint is gameplay. You know, a lot of people are sort of taken aback from story told games, because as we'll get into in another episode, you know, a lot of times it just feels like you're on a rails. And what I like is that Hollow Knight blended a really, really story rich narrative experience in something as complicated as a Metroidvania, because a lot of people are like, oh man, you know, like I love this game, but I'm not too good at platformers, you know, and there is a very particular challenge to the game as well, because, you know, there are tons of platform, it's a huge platformer, Metroidvania style, but there is a quote unquote secret area, right? That is only platforming. You do not fight anybody until like the very end. And that's the whole thing is that it's this ridiculous platforming challenge that they put into the game, which I thought was something else that was pretty interesting as well. You know, they're able to bring these ideas to this one area, to this one realm, this one world that they've built, you know, and it all makes sense, as you were saying, Kev. Like it's the narratives make sense because of the way that these characters are stylized, because of what they do and how that affects you as a player character. But then the gameplay makes sense too. It's a very, very crisp and smooth and clean animated side scroller. And that's something that's just like, I for one truly appreciate as well, that the game doesn't feel like you're on a rails, or specifically, or even more so since it's a platformer, the game doesn't feel like you're like magnetized or momentum driven or anything. It's not like wobbly or wonky. It's very, very smooth, very, very crisp, and very precise. And that brings on a whole challenge in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how I feel about it, basically how I would always say about Dark Souls is like Dark Souls has to be difficult to really give you an impression that this is like a bleak and tough world to be in. Same exact reasoning goes into this. It's like, I wouldn't even say it's like super difficult of a game. Mm-hmm. It's a little challenging at times, but like that kind of puts you in the mindset that this is a bleak and tough world. And I don't think there's any better way to communicate that than to actually make you feel it as a player. So like,
exactly.
You know, there might be some, you know, drawbacks to that. Like people want to experience the story and they have a hard time with it, but it's also kind of, you know, if I'm going to be like artsy fartsy, it's like, that's kind of the artistic integrity of making a game. It's like, well, not everyone's going to be able to enjoy it, you know,
sure.
And that's unfortunate, but it makes the art stand stronger and be more indicative of the emotions and the feeling that you're trying to elicit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's absolutely. And that comes into, you know, the way that art as, or video games as an art medium, is designed to make you feel or to give you a particular impression of for me, the atmosphere of Hollow Knight, and after, especially, you know, sort of figuring more things out as you go in the story, everything has this really bleak and depressing air about it, but your interactions with particular characters are very wholesome, and they're very sort of intimate in some cases. You know, you're fighting, when you fight Hornet, you're like, why is she like a rival for me? Like, where did she come from? You know, when you meet Quirrell, you're like, well, if he doesn't really remember anything, how does he know that he's not from here already? You know, those are the big like theoretical questions that people in the fan base go hard about, you know. And there's one person, like, to give credit to, there's a YouTuber named Mossbag. He's fucking hilarious. But secondly, he's done, like, he's gone deep down the rabbit hole of Hollow Knight lore. And so his whole page is on Hollow Knight lore, Hollow Knight and analyses, and then also just a lot of Hollow Knight memes as well, which to me is pretty funny. But he really goes into it as well about, you know, why particular characters might have done a particular thing. And if you pay attention to the nuances of the story, then these particular theories and these particularly world-built sort of side quests, I'd say why they make sense for the story. Because there are three endings, if I remember correctly. There are three different endings to Hollow Knight. There's the neutral ending, in my opinion, where it's neutral slash bad because of particularities in the story. And then there is the overtly bad ending. And then there is the true good ending. The only way to get the true good ending is by just about doing everything in the game. like going to the secret areas, talking to everybody, getting all the side quests and all the side plots done and out the way, and experiencing the true cover to cover story of Hollow Knight. And that's an extreme challenge. It's especially when you get to those later levels, like the level that, for example, that's just like all platformers, right? But the way that they create this environment is it's amazing to me that, you know, all of this is packed into this one adventure. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And like something you said was like, you know, you have to experience it kind of cover to cover, right? Mm-hmm. And like deal with all these different side quests. To me, that's what it's all about. It's almost like it's something that, like, personally I've been calling Breath of the Wild syndrome, where it's like you want to futz about and meet all the colorful characters and play around and all this stuff. You never, at least I never want to fucking end the game. I never want to beat it, because I just want to keep playing around and meeting new people and having all these stories happen. And so it's like there's this fucking crazy death threat looming over the world, and it's like, yeah, but I'm gonna, like,
I'm gonna pick flowers.
Yeah, and with the, like, all the side characters, there's a really good sense that they know each other, and I think that's a really important aspect to mm-hmm. you know, kind of having your side quests like that, because it's like, you know, any given character will know some number of the other characters. They don't necessarily all know all of them, but mm-hmm. you know, it's like the shopkeeper knows, is like, oh, my husband's over here and blah, blah, blah. And then she'll mention other people, like, yeah, there was this weird dude who, you know, you get this impression that they're not only aware of each other and know each other, but they're like, there are events happening outside of your, you know, perspective. And it's like, oh, this just happened while you were away. And it's like, oh, cool. You know, there's a really good sense of that. And that's kind of, you know, part of what I like getting my hands into, which is why I've never beaten the game, because I just keep messing around.
Yeah, and see, I've never done the true ending or anything like that. Everything that I've seen past my version of the game that I've played, like my ending, I guess, everything else I've seen either through like Mossback's content, or from somebody who like did a speed run, or from somebody who did like just the particular challenges in the game. Which we can actually, we'll get into the all those different challenges after the juicy ad break. That's likely to happen.
That's happening right now.
Any second now,
we can break for it. The only true way to get to the true ending is through these ad breaks. Hello, welcome back from ads, beautiful ads. We're going to continue on our discussion about Hollow Knight. Dominic, lead the way.
Absolutely. So the main things that we're going to discuss in the second part are what has come after the base experience of Hollow Knight. Like we were saying earlier, Hollow Knight had three different endings to it, all of which have very, very particularities as far as their own individual narratives. All amazing experiences. Leaves you really questioning a lot with the story as far as your individuality as the character, and among other things. But more importantly, what has come afterwards are completely free and extremely beneficial updates to the game, which includes some other versions of play or other styles of play. There was one, and Zach, you'll be my co-pilot on this, because I'll need your help on this. There was an update known as Lifeblood, right, that fixed and balanced a few different things in the game. Because of what? I never experienced Hollow Knight pre Lifeblood.
So Lifeblood was actually the third content patch.
Ooh, okay.
It was just a bunch of balance things. Like some certain charm combos were too strong, so they'll like sort of nerf the bonuses you get.
Okay.
They changed the design of the hive area.
Mm-hmm.
They added or changed some attacks of different enemies. They've added some just quality of life, like animations to things. It was just kind of a sort of just like a content patch with no like new things to do. It just kind of changed the way some of the things worked.
Gotcha. Because there were some other interesting DLCs or content packs or updates that they made as well. And to just quickly clarify, for those who still haven't really gone through Hollow Knight a whole lot, who are still interested in playing the game or for the first time, charms are particular items that you get that influence your character and what your character does in a lot of different ways, either giving you a special ability to use or a special condition that you have whenever you take damage or give damage or anything like that. And the way that you do these the way that you use these charms is by putting them together in certain combinations as you are resting at the bench. Kind of like how we talked before that the bench is sort of like the bonfire of this game. Benches reset all of the enemies that you previously killed, and it allows you to manage how you're using your charms. So the continuous, you know, adding or updating of different charms in the game as these different content packs come out still influence the base game. And that's what I love the most. All of these different content packs are designed to just influence the original experience. For example, there's I can't remember specifically which update it came from, but they added new sort of just styles of playing, basically. There's I think of it as like a New Game Plus version, except not really New Game Plus. It's just it is, you restart the game, except it is completely Iron Man experience. You have no resets, no respawns. When you die, you are required to delete your save file, which is one
I
of...
I believe that was in the base game, but you have to beat the game first before it allows you to do it.
Gotcha. And which was amazing because like the game is already hard enough, right? And you can even you can make individualized challenges for yourself already. You know, like you'll never upgrade your nail. You'll never use charms or anything like that. You can make your own challenges, but this the way that the game organically gives you its own challenges is exceptional. And I think it's called Steel Soul is the type of gameplay. Like that playthrough in itself is one of the most difficult things I've done ever for games. Absolutely,
yeah,
impossible.
Like, the way they treat Hollow Knight is very it's just kind of, you can invest as much time as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can do just the neutral ending, you know, go through the game, get the ending. You can do everything and get the true ending. You can play again and do it this way, and you can do all these expansions and get all these other little details about the world. You can put as much as you want into the game, but even if you stop partway through, kind of like I did, you know, and I could go pick it back up, I'm satisfied with the game, you know?
Right.
I can play just a bit and it's satisfying. You can play to the first ending and it's satisfying. You play to the true ending and it's satisfying. You know, you can keep putting as much as you want into the game, almost like to ridiculous levels. I don't know how many hours it would take to do absolutely everything in the game.
Close to 60.
Yeah, that's quite a lot.
About
for
what I'm
like,
at. Yeah,
for a side-scrolly Metroidvania, 60 hours to enjoy all of the content. And then you can, like you said, make your own challenges or just play again. Like,
right.
There's so much that you can invest. You can go in as much as you want, or you can just kind of enjoy the little bit that you see naturally.
And that's what's most important to me, is that the no matter how you play the game, based on your own style or based on your own commitment to the story, nothing is dissatisfying. Like the bad ending, it doesn't leave you with a sense of oh shit, because the ending in itself is really interesting. But going back to these DLCs, so there was Hidden Dreams, which was just reading off the Steam page. They gave you some new boss fights, some new upgrades, and they added new music, which I'll talk about in a second. And then there was the Grim Troop. Now, did the Grim Troop happen? But you said the Grim Troop happened before Lifeblood, right?
Correct.
Okay. Which the Grim Troop I love because it is a new major quest line with new boss fights, with new charms and enemies and friends as well, and just a completely unique experience that is just organically attached to the world. It's not like you're playing a brand new storyline or anything like that that has nothing to do with what you got. It adds on new endings to the game in a way that, you know, it's all a part of the same universe. It's all a part of the same experience, and everything that you do in all of these different quest lines and all these new boss fights and everything like that, it all matters under this one blanketed experience. And then there was Lifeblood, which we talked about, some new upgraded bosses, some new bosses, and a lot of tweaks and refinements. But then there was the fourth and final that they did for Hollow Knight was Godmaster. Now, Godmaster opened up a whole separate situation. Like, Zach, if you want to, because I don't really know a whole lot else about Godmaster other than it. To me, it feels like a boss rush.
That's basically what it was. Okay. So the main thing, there's like a short little quest line to, like, you got to go like find a key and then you got to unlock a door, and it takes you, I think the place was called like God Home or something.
Yeah.
And it's like the angelic sort of heavenly area. And there's four like giant doors, and each one is a different boss rush in itself. You basically go through and you have to fight, I think it's like 9 bosses in each for the first 3, and then the final one is every single boss in the game back to back.
Wow.
And then with all those, before you go in, there's different bindings on the door, and those are basically challenges you can impose on yourself. The 4 that exist are, there's the nail binding, which puts your sword at the base level. There's the shield binding, which makes it so your health is capped at 4. There's the charm binding, which makes it so you can't use charms. And then there's soul binding, which makes it so you can only have 33% of your soul with no extras, which is enough to do 1 soul blast or 1 heal.
Right, right. Now, another...
So it gets pretty difficult.
Yeah, like that sounds extremely daunting, but I think we sort of gleaned over maybe 1 or 2 other parts of the game that we should have clarified in the beginning on the idea of soul. So soul is basically your magic power. You get soul either naturally in some cases, or you get it by
damaging enemies.
By damaging enemies, and in some case, depending on the charm, you can even get soul for being hit by enemies.
Yes.
And what you do with soul, you either use soul to cast, maybe I think it's like 2 different iterations of spells. There's just sort of like a charge beam, basically, that just sort of like blasts some energy forward, or like a ground pound.
Mm-hmm.
Or you use soul to heal yourself as well. That's the interesting part about how to manage your soul properly as well. And adding restrictions like just flat health or damage or soul or anything like that adds a whole different unique experience that makes the game just a lot more difficult. But one thing that I did want to talk about before we have some more sort of closing thoughts is, again, for me, I always bring it back to the nuanced experience, either literary or like musically. And Christopher Larkin, the composer for the Hollow Knight soundtrack, he's incepted probably my favorite soundtrack in video games. It's got to be in my top 10 of all time, which is it's such an amazing thing. And we talk a lot about how, you know, the music sets the atmosphere and the music sets the tone. And it's amazing to me that it feels as if the music is sort of its own organic thing. There's a lot of musical nuances that go on depending on where you are and what you're doing. That I think it not only just to pull from a cliche, it adds to the atmosphere, obviously, but I think more importantly, it gives you a sense of feeling about that atmosphere that it's not like Skyrim cues where you're walking in the forest and suddenly you hear dragon fighting music and you're like, oh shit, like what, you know. It's very standard towards the environment that you're in, as opposed to the things that you're doing. You know, when you fight Hornet has her own theme. When you're in Greenpath, you only hear the Greenpath music. When you're in Dirtmouth, you only hear the Dirtmouth music. And it's something that I've really resonated with because of the way that they allow music to give you an inclination or an implication or a feeling.
Yeah, the music, it has a good example of this sort of phenomenon that I've noticed. A lot of games will have a soundtrack that on its own isn't very interesting. I won't pop in the Hollow Knight soundtrack and just jam out to it. It's just kind of ambient and supportive of the feelings you want to feel, right? Or sure. The feelings that, you know, a designer wants you to feel, right?
Yeah.
So it's not so much, there are some bombastic tracks, but even then, those aren't ones that I would listen to on their own. It's just, it fits the feeling that I'm supposed to be feeling right now. So 80% of the time, it's just kind of ambient and soft, little like plucking strings or this or that, that just kind of has this own mood of its, you know, of its own making. Mm-hmm. And at other parts, it's the climax of the area and it's super loud and everything. The soundtrack isn't, you know, its own thing, but I wouldn't listen to the soundtrack on my own. But in the context of the game, it's beautiful. It's super supportive of everything that the designer wants you to feel.
See, it's funny because I don't know. It's just a difference in approach, because I personally very much listen to the soundtrack on its own. Like, I'll be in the car and I was like, well, why don't I hear I'm doing like a long drive, so I was like, let me put on the Greenpath music or something like that. So like I will actively participate in independently listening to the soundtrack on my own, just because of
that's probably just a difference between either of us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in my opinion, it's just kind of it just supports the sounds.
Sure.
Or it supports the sort of feeling that you're supposed to be feeling, and that might be why you resonate with it, is that it is indicative of a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to feel that, you know, while you're doing whatever you're doing.
Right. Do we have is there anything else that any of us would really like to get into as far as Hollow Knight, as far as lore or mechanics or art or music or narratives or DLCs, anything like that?
For me, I always felt like the game is fun to explore in. It's fun to move around. I think that the fighting isn't very interesting, or at least like it's, to me, the fighting was difficult because I felt limited in what I could do. For example, what are your movement options and what are your fighting options? You can walk around, you can dash, you can jump. That's pretty much it. In terms of fighting, you can slash. You can slash in front of you, or you can do a down stab. Can you do an up stab?
Yeah, yes. It's four. Yeah, you attack left to right and then up and down as well. And then what comes with downward slashing is what people call pogoing, where yeah, and that's just like another sort of part of combat that I think adds a little bit more flavor. But
yeah, to me, and this is, I don't think anybody shares this opinion with me, so take it with a huge grain of salt, but I feel like when I'm fighting something, it's this sort of frantic, unorganized mess that I'm in, where it's just, I don't want to be here, so I'm just going to jump, I guess. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel very good to have like that back and forth, like I'm going to hit you and jump back and block and this and that. It doesn't have like this good, really solid flow to it, in my opinion. It's just kind of, the attack is going to be here, so I just don't want to be here, so I'm going to jump. It's very simple. And I suppose it works, but to me, I didn't find any depth in the combat itself. That being said, though, to me, the game's not about combat. The game is about that atmosphere and that exploration and all of that, so I don't hold it too strongly against the game. I just feel like, to me, there's not really a whole lot of depth in the fighting, so I don't find myself wanting to do it very much.
Mm-hmm. So, something I will add to that. A lot of, like, the main story bosses are a lot easier and have sort of simpler attacks. When you start getting to, like, the optional, like, endgame bosses, a lot of them have really, like, weird and difficult patterns that you can't just, you know, oh, I see the attack's going here, let me just jump, or let me just sidestep it. You, in a lot of cases, you have to either like dodge through the boss or jump and like wall jump to get around things and do a lot of like weird movements to dodge certain attacks. So later it does become, at least in my opinion, more interesting of combat. But I do see where you're coming from.
Yeah, and I think there were like one or two bosses that I accidentally ran into that were more complicated, but that was when I just got frustrated by how limited my movement was. Because like I said, it's just, it's jump, it's dash, it's attack, and that's pretty much all you've got. So to me, even when it gets more complicated, it's definitely more interesting by all means.
Mm-hmm.
But I do get kind of frustrated with my limited input options.
I totally respect that. My feelings about combat is that to me it seems like I think it's more of I feel like it's more of a means to an end. Like, when you engage,
it's a means to provide conflict, like,
yeah,
in a feelable, interactive way. It introduces conflict into the story.
Yeah, and to me, nailing the like different combos that you do with like the nails and your with the nail and your like different abilities. You know, it's like you pogo and then you do like a downward, like a ground pound spell, and then you keep like tacking on from like left to right a little bit, and then do another like air slash or whatever. Stuff like that adds a new element that I appreciate, but I do still think that even with the way that they sort of organically have like combination fighting in Hollow Knight, I think that it's definitely just organic, and it's definitely just to me designed to just exactly what you were saying, just implement conflict as a means to further understand the rest of the story. And that's something that I can agree with as well.
Yeah, and you know, there might be things that, you know, I didn't notice or I didn't get to, but that still isn't an incredible thing to, you know, play. I played a good amount. I think maybe like at least like 6 to 8 hours of the game, you know. I played that long, I still don't have that much variance. There might be some more variance, like you were saying, with, oh, now I can ground pound, or I can do this, or I can do that. Mm-hmm. Did I get the ground pound? Maybe I did. But anyway, I still, even that far time-wise into the game, I still felt like there wasn't a whole lot I could do in terms of move variance. And it just kind of frustrated me specifically, but that's, you know, like I said, only me. And it is important to the game. It does need combat because, well, unless there was something else to replace it, if you just took the combat out, it would definitely be a lesser game. but that doesn't stop me from being a little bit frustrated with it.
Oh, I mean, and that's, which is understandable. Because then if, you know, if you take combat out, then it just sort of feels like an on the rails side scroll experience.
Like a platformer with some world building, and, you know, a lot of the platforming ties into the combat controls. So it's, I don't know, it needed something there, but I feel like they could have done maybe something else with the combat, or maybe added more to it or something. Not necessarily more complex, but just kind of a little more depth in what you're doing. Because going kind of back to what Zach said, it was like you could, oh, they do this, this, and this, and I just kind of have to know the exact thing I need to do. So it just becomes memorize your opponent in some scenarios. And I, even though Dark Souls gets like a reputation of that being the case, I feel like it's less the case in at least Dark Souls 1. And I've never really been a fan of that kind of design where it's just do it over and over until you know what you need to do.
I can respect that. I definitely feel the Sekiro level of, you know, figure out the combinations and figure out the right spells and specifically the right charms to use as well, that influence your gameplay to figure out the boss. Like, that's something that I personally resonate with too.
And that's probably why I didn't like Sekiro.
Yeah, because I mean, it's a lot of it is combat wise. It is, you know, it is doing the right combination to deal the maximum amount of damage possible, and then you just hurry up and just like dash out and avoid the next attack. It's classic Metroidvania boss fighting, in my opinion. You know, it's okay, well, he on his third phase, he's gonna start like spitting fire, so like what the hell are we gonna do about that? You know, and I think that more importantly, the combat of the game complements the different styles of characters. When you see Hornet fighting, for example, you have already have an understanding as to what kind of character Hornet is, and she doesn't really say much. She doesn't really do much, from what you understand in certain instances. But when you see her fight, you're like, oh, she's like this graceful character. Like, she, you know, very flowy and very flourishing and intricate use of the needle and thread as a means of, like, you know, doing like melee and ranged attacks and stuff like that. Like, you get an insight on their character based on how they fight, which is also something that I appreciate as well.
Yes, and I will give it that. I will definitely say that that's when the game, or more particularly when the combat shines the most, is when it's characterizing someone. Mm-hmm. The only shame to me is that it's not always characterizing someone. Like you said, Hornet, it's like, oh, you get this really good impression of, she's very precise and elegant, jumps and throws her little needle and flies to it, and very, like, kind of life and agile and everything. A lot of times I'll end up in an area and it's just, you know, it's like, maybe I'm accidentally running into weird DLC crap, but I'll just get in a room and there's just this big fuck off bug dude that I know nothing about, and he just does this set of moves and I have to memorize them. It's like, all right, well, that's when it doesn't shine so much. But like you said, yes, absolutely, when it's characterizing someone, it is really brilliant. And I really enjoyed the Hornet fights. Those were some of the highlights of my game. I only fought her, I think, like twice, maybe, I don't remember, but yeah. I liked every fight I had with her, and I liked, you know, some of the early kind of peon enemies where it's like, oh, they're kind of just bumbling and this and that, and it gave me a good kind of impression that it's like they're sort of zombie like in a way.
Yeah,
but, you know, not every boss you fight is like that, and not every enemy you fight is like that. So it's in those moments I feel it.
Is there any sort of last closing points that we want to get into for Hollow Knight?
I think that's about it. I dearly love the atmosphere and the exploration and the feeling of being in that world. It has this wonderful little feeling of, you know, everything's kind of like bleak, but a little bit hopeful. And, you know, mm-hmm. you're you're in this perpetual sort of like dawn sort of time where it's like just before sunrise. It always kind of feels like it's just before sunrise.
It
has a really good mood about it. Exploration is great. And like I said, with the mechanics, platforming's fine enough. It's good. And the combat, when it's characterizing someone, is wonderful. And all around, highly recommend the game. It's a fun game.
Oh, of course. I absolutely recommend, you know, if you've never gotten into it before, definitely create your own experience first. Play the game. Try not to look at any guides or anything, and figure everything out for yourself. And then once you see what you've missed, then go back and be like, oh, well, let me try and re-experience this or re-experience that, you know, and then make challenges for yourself. But then if you want to go even further, again, I cannot recommend enough. If you get like absolutely hardball full dive into the story, as I did, I would recommend watching Mossbag's content, because he's done like a couple part series on the story and on the nuances and the themes and the approaches and everything about it. Definitely highly recommend that. And then, like all of us, wait with bated fucking breath at a Silk Song that should be coming out. I don't even know when, but it's going to be, oh, I'm so excited.
Know if they have a date for that.
Yeah. But you play as Hornet and, you know, Bug Waifu, right? Like everyone loves Hornet because she's such an interesting character.
And from what I saw, I like the way she moves. And, all of my, criticism about the combat might just go away, just from what I saw of her movement and her fighting, it just seemed a bit more interesting to me. So who knows? I might like that way better.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will say, if you want to hear more about our discussions, and especially if you want to reach out to us more, if you're not sure where else to listen to us from, we are on Spotify, we are on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Breaker, Radio Public. I think that's about it as far as where we're at. But if you want to show us some love, reach out to us on social media. Our Instagram is Tombstone_podcast. Twitter is Tombstone_pod. You can send us direct messages. We would love to hear from you guys, especially about what more content that you would like to see. You know, if there is something that you are extremely passionate about that we haven't done an episode about, let us know, and we'll see if it's already, firstly, if it's already in our books, and then secondly, if it's something that we can include in our little bracket. For our Anchor page, if you want to see where we are mainly distributed, you can go to anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast, and that's that one. God bless. But if you want to show us some extra love and support, you can leave us a review and a good rating on Apple Podcast. We've gotten a few people doing that already, which is so sweet of you all. Thank you so much. And if you want to go the extra mile, you can leave us a monetary donation. We absolutely appreciate all of your support, because it will help us better this channel in the future, or better this show in the future. And you can go to anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast/support. And again, we'll be getting into what we might be doing as far as fun live streaming or anything like that, because the holidays are coming up and we have some fun holiday themed things for you guys, which I'm very excited about. But other than that, I believe that's all the bases that we're covering for Hollow Knight on this episode. Devin, if you want to send us off, that would be pretty swell.
All right. Yeah, thank you again for listening. Appreciate it. Again, give us any reviews that you would like to. You can give us a 5-star review and then just absolutely shit on us. We don't care.
we'd like to hear back from you. All press is good press,
my man. Yeah, all press is good press, as long as it's 5 stars, though. You can't give us a 1-star review. Yeah, have to give us 5 stars and then shit on
it. This podcast is shit. 5 stars.
Yeah, there you go.
10 out of 10 would never watch again.
Exactly. Thank you so much, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye, lovelies.